You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, Prince Rupert is bustling with activity these days. The city of 12,000 has seen its fair share of ups and downs over the decades, but things are happening in Rupert once again. The port of Prince Rupert is continuously expanding, now the third largest in Canada, and more businesses seem to be opening and construction is everywhere. But Rupert is still digging itself out of a hole of infrastructure needs. For years, there have been boil water advisories. Even now, the water straight out of the pipe is not recommended for drinking. The city needs new water pipes and a new water treatment plant. Not easy things to do when the 100-year-old plus pipes keep breaking. Even as the Prince Rupert Port looks to take on more and more major export projects, the question remains, can the city's infrastructure absorb more pressure from expansion? Today, I chat with Prince Rupert Mayor Herb Pond about how the city is progressing with infrastructure development, what he's seeking from the upper levels of government at this week's Union of BC Municipalities Conference, and we get an update on the controversial and soon-to-be-open roundabout project. Stay with us.
Mayor Herb Pond, I'm the mayor of Prince Rupert, and I'm currently sitting in Victoria getting ready for the Union of BC Municipalities Conference.
Great, Mayor Pond. Thanks so much for being with us on CICK News again. Sounds like it was quite a busy summer in Prince Rupert. It's hard to miss all the construction going on, and I know that for some people, they see it as a barrier and a bit of an inconvenience, but the long-term goal seems to be getting closer. What can you tell us and update us about, you know, how things have gone over the summer, especially with that roundabout that is pretty much complete?
It's only half jokingly that I tell people I drive around and count excavators that are working in town. And the count is pretty high. Like, for a long time, there's been a lot of excavators working out on Ridley Island. The Port of Prince Rupert does its expansion. They're spending $3 billion out there. But nobody gets to see that on a daily basis. And it's now time for the town to start catching up. And so you're absolutely right. There's construction happening everywhere. We've got a new middle school under construction. We've got some apartment buildings under construction. We've got a new A&W going in on a corner there. And then the roundabout project that's in the middle of, right in front of the courthouse. Department of Highways project, so I can't claim any credit for the speed with which they're achieving that, but the contractor there and the Department of Highways have just been amazing, and certainly faster than anybody thought. That roundabout is taking shape, and I know it's very controversial, but I think it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be beautify that area. And yes, you're absolutely right. People do complain, but about all of the, you know, diversions as they have to go around where we're digging out the water pipes or whatever. But every single person that I've had a conversation with talks about how frustrated they were for a moment and then how a smile came to their face because they realized things are happening in Prince Rupert.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like yourself, traveling, you know, through the region, I often talk to a lot of folks in different communities, but all have a connection to Rupert or make their way to Rupert for one reason or another. And you know, every time it comes up, it seems like people understand there's a lot happening in Prince Rupert right now. I guess the question is, what gives? Why are we seeing all this activity in Prince Rupert? It's not just, you know, as we just talked about, the construction and repairs of the roads and pipes. It just seems that Prince Rupert is a lot more active right now. What are you hearing from the community? What are you seeing?
Well, we could talk about the great mayor they have, but nobody would believe that. No, listen, this has been a multi-decade march, right? Our whole region, all across the Northwest, went into the dumper back in the early 2000s with the closure of Skeena Cellulose and all the associated sawmills and the, you know, woods operations, and nowhere in the whole region was the hit felt harder than in Prince Rupert, where our population fell from the 19,000s to down to 10, almost overnight. In the 2007, the community, along with the Port of Prince Rupert and other communities up and down the corridor, rallied around this notion of a container terminal in Prince Rupert, which really reinvented the Prince Rupert economy and has had downstream effects for many other communities. But that really ignited a renewal in terms of the jobs and the family supporting wages and all those sorts of things, but it didn't renew the town. So the town still was having a hangover from all the lost pulp mill taxes and all of those things, while the Port of Prince Rupert enjoyed this incredible resurgence, and we're thankful for that, as all the terminals have done well and continue to expand. I mean, Canada's third largest port now, and constantly being referred to by the Premier of Alberta and Prime Minister as a gateway. But the town has struggled to catch up. So that's where we're at. What you're seeing now is the town catching up to the success of the terminals that are out there. And it's in its early phases. For people that are tired of construction around town, I don't know how to break it to you, but we've got a lot more construction to do. But it is all about reinventing, renewing the community of Prince Rupert at every level, from things like basic water and sewer and those things through to shopping and recreation and community amenities. So lots going on, lots more to go on. It is not what myself or this council initiated, it's what a number of councils and mayors have done over a course of time, and we're just acting on it.
You mentioned one thing there, Mayor Pond. Rupert has been in the spotlight as of late in other political circles around the country. You mentioned Alberta, Victoria. As I understand, you mentioned you're down in Victoria right now getting ready for UBCM, the Union of Canadian Municipalities, to have their annual conference. And I know there are usually a number of resolutions. There's, you know, conferences, there's breakout groups to talk about all these issues, a lot of them that impact, you know, all municipalities, not just one or the other. But there are specific, you know, issues with Prince Rupert. It's a gateway to the north, as it's been noted. What are you going to be talking about in Victoria? What are some of the priorities that you're trying to work with your other counterparts across the north to get the message across to federal, provincial governments of what they need to do to help municipalities in the north here?
So for Prince Rupert, there's no ambiguity. Our number one ask, our number two ask, our number three ask is we need to get to water treatment so we can get off of this cycle of boil water advisories. We've done some figures on it, and roughly in the last 10 years, we've been on boil water advisories about 40% of the time. And it's hard to imagine that Canada's next great port city is going to be successful if we're constantly on and off of these boil water advisories. So Prince Rupert, in its 115-year history, has never had full water treatment. We've never filtered our water. We chlorinate, but we've never filtered. We need to get to full filtration, which will meet the more modern standards. And that's really what it is. We've still got the same water we always had, but the standards have been changing over time, and we need to upgrade those. So that's where we start. And of course, you know, trickling down from that, then, well, how can we pay for it? Well, you know, dealing with the port tax cap would help. Dealing with built on port land properties would help. And I've got to say, the Port of Prince Rupert has been very, very much there with us. They agree that we need some help. They were a huge part of lobbying with us to get the package that we put together for the replacement of water pipes, which in all ended up being $200 million, mm-hmm. which is an astounding figure. So lots going on there. And as you mentioned, I've just come back from Alaska, where I was presenting at a conference about the need to reestablish the Alaska Marine Highway connection in and out of Prince Rupert. Because again, that's another regional impact, right? The ferry lands in Prince Rupert, but you know, as you've driven down the highway, you know when the Alaska ferry is in because of the Alaska plates you see going past, and they're stopping and spending money in Hazleton and Smithers and camping in Quesnel. And so there's another piece of infrastructure that we're working on, along with just a bunch of other healthcare. Obviously, we need to attract more doctors to the region. We're working on that.
Yeah. One other thing, and we've chatted about this before, as you mentioned, even the Premier of Alberta has brought up Prince Rupert quite a lot lately around the idea of a pipeline, an oil pipeline to the North Coast. Obviously, we saw that years ago with the Northern Gateway project that was hugely unpopular and eventually abandoned. But now we're back again. But it's, looking at all the activity in Prince Rupert and, as you mentioned, the infrastructure issues, it's hard to fathom having a big ticket project like that, a huge mega project, never mind, whether oil or gas or something else, coming into a place like Rupert where we are still dealing with a lot of these big infrastructure issues. It feels like the town could barely support, that type of project. The infrastructure could support that type of project if it were to come around. What's your take on those conversations, and have you been a part of that?
So not directly. I was in Edmonton for the Industrial Heartland gathering conference, and the Industrial Heartland group is the communities that service the oil patch, so outside of Edmonton there, and they very much are focused on moving as much of their product out through Rupert as they can, so there's a natural connection there. The Premier Smith actually spoke in the morning, and I managed to find her afterwards and tease her that we're going to start a drinking game out on the West Coast. Every time she mentions Prince Rupert, we'll all have to take a shot, because it is on their tongues a lot. That's an exciting place for Rupert to be. As far as pipelines go, my focus is on water pipes. I'm not going to worry too much about oil pipes at this point in time. There's so many steps that would have to be gone through. But there's a ton of other energy products. I mean, Kitimat is moving natural gas from northern British Columbia and Alberta. Prince Rupert has two propane export facilities. Yes. Canada is supplying 15% of Japan's propane. I mean, these are huge success stories. Yeah. And there's a growing appetite for that. There is, and our Northwest Corridor, it's not just Rupert. I mean, Rupert is the name of the place where the port is, but I always think of it as this whole Northwest complex. You've got Stewart moving mining product. You've got Kitimat doing what it's doing. You got Prince Rupert doing what it's doing and creating opportunities all up and down that corridor, whether it's moving forest products or other things. And I don't think we've begun to tap it. I actually think there's opportunities in manufacturing that we haven't quite got our heads around that could make a difference in every community up and down this corridor.
Yeah, no doubt. One other thing I wanted to talk about, Mayor Pond, as I mentioned, there's a lot more activity going on in Prince Rupert, say, 10 years ago. And save the COVID episode, we've always seen cruise ships coming into Prince Rupert, but it sounds like that next year we're going to see a huge increase in those cruise ships coming in. They bring lots of people, mostly coming from the U.S., Western Seaboard there, on their way up to Alaska. And, you know, these people stop in Rupert for a day and kind of spread out like ants all over the city. And for the summer period, it's quite a boost for local businesses. We're going to see even more. I remember reading earlier this year that the 60,000 people come through to Rupert on the cruise ships this past year, and we're going to see that, you know, almost double next year. What are you envisioning and hearing from local businesses about that, and what does that bring to the community? Why is that so important to ensure that we keep seeing those cruise ships come into port?
Yeah, you know, it's a variety of things. We're actually jointly doing a study with the Port of Prince Rupert, analyze the economic impact, but also to look at the infrastructure side and the cost side of it to make sure that the city of Prince Rupert isn't having to shell out dollars in order to support an industry, right?
Yeah.
And to make sure that we understand how to do it right. To the north of us, they've had a lot of experience, and we can learn from their experiences. However, we know that those cruise ship passengers come prepared to spend money. It's really hard for local businesses to invest when they're not certain if it's going to be $20,000, $30,000, $60,000, you know. So as this ramps up, when people can look to next year and say it's going to be well north of 100,000 passengers, that gives local businesses the opportunity to actually make those investments in advance. And so I think it's chicken and egg. The cruise ships want more experience here in Prince Rupert. They love the cruise or the tour products that we offer, but they want more, and they love the retail that we have, but they want more. And the retailers and tour operators would love to grow their product, but they need to be assured there's going to be a customer for that, right? So chicken and egg, but definitely you can see the town get excited when the cruise ships are in. We need to make sure that those people are being well dispersed so that it's not causing uncomfortable chaos for anyone, either the visitors or the residents. But the other piece of it is we're seeing people from the region come out to Prince Rupert on cruise ship days because they want to see what's happening. They want to sit down at Dolly's Fish and Chips and have fish and chips, or at Bob's on the Rocks, or up at the Crest, and be part of the excitement. So people are coming from Terrace and Smithers and up and down the line just to be part of the action.
Just the last thing for you, Mayor Pond. You know, obviously, you mentioned you've been on a bit of a road trip visiting communities, representing Prince Rupert at UBCM there, as well as other conferences. Some of the issues you mentioned long term, the water in particular. We're on a boil water advisory right now. We're headed into winter soon here. What's on the docket, or what's on the menu going forward for the next few weeks as you kind of wrap up this tour? And what are you looking at in terms of the next phase of dealing with Prince Rupert's water situation?
So you know, we continue to do the pipe replacement, and that's ongoing and going to be ongoing for a year or two yet. Replacing the worst parts of the city's distribution system, the ones that are most likely to fail. That's the critical piece. And we are lobbying like crazy to secure the money we need to do the filtration. So once we secure those funds, it obviously takes a little while to build and get it up and operating. So it's not something that's immediate. Waiting in the wings for us is a sewage treatment. We don't talk about it a great deal, but Prince Rupert was built as a city that distributes its sewage, disperses it into the harbor. It's a system that actually is fairly effective as long as you're not too big a community. But the government of Canada is dictating that that practice might end. So we're working on a pilot project for a wetland treatment that could be pretty revolutionary in terms of lowering costs and operating costs. Lots and lots. And then, of course, you know, we inherited the pulp mill site as a city. And for a long time, that was a millstone around our neck. It cost $1 million a year just to hold, looking after all the licenses, the environmental issues, having security on site. That site now has Pembina pipe lines with an export facility, but there's lots of room there for more. So one of the reasons that my role is as much on the road as it is we're always looking for that new tenant that will come join the family out on Watson Island. There's about four or five businesses operating out there now. And that is a huge part of our future. We have got some real interest around hydrogen. If the provincial government can extend the electrification all the way down to Rupert, then there's some really big export projects that could use the old pulp mill water lines and other assets there to export hydrogen around the world and thereby do great things for the environment at the same time.
Yeah. Great, Mayor Pond. Very exciting and always nice to chat with you. Good luck with your time in Victoria at UBCM there, and I'm sure we'll catch up in due time.
Always love talking to you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.